And good afternoon. It is a Thursday, September the 28th, 2017, 12:15 p.m. coming up on 12:16 Eastern Daylight Time. You are tuned into the Now program. I am Scott Spears, and I will be your host for the next 2 hours. Do want to remind you really quickly, coming up next hour, we're going to be joined by longtime HBO sports analyst Larry Merchant to give his opinions on the NFL, what the president said about the NFL, and the players who are kneeling during the national anthem, and his thoughts on the players who have kneeled and the owners who have approved it or not approved it. That's coming up at 1:10 live today. Larry Merchant, longtime HBO boxing analyst and sports columnist long before that. And we're going to do that because of so much email and Facebook and phone calls. The volume we got yesterday when we discussed that topic. So we'll continue today to discuss that topic. But right now, if there's any other topic that could compare with what's going on in the NFL, it is healthcare. There was a debate on Monday night on CNN between Bernie Sanders and Lindsey Graham. Is the repeal going to happen? Is Obamacare going to go away? If it does, what does that mean? Will the insurers stay? Will Medicaid stay? Will Medicare stay? Is it going to be Medicare for all? I don't know the answers to any of these questions, but a gentleman who might be able to shed some light is one of my favorite guests. I love having him on. It's an honor to have him on every time he comes on. He has sold a whole lot of books because he is a tremendous author on aging and weight loss. He was on the Today Show for so many years, that's probably where you remember him best, waking up in the morning with Dr. Art Uihlein, who is always a pleasure to welcome to these microphones. Dr. Uihlein, how are you?
Well, I am fine, and the pleasure is mine. After listening to that introduction, you've made my day, Scott.
Well, and I didn't even have that written down. That was all off the cuff.
Thank you.
Dr. Uihlein, we talked back in April. I pulled up the archives. Last time we talked was in April when they were trying to repeal, the Republicans were trying to repeal this again. That was before John McCain in that very late night session put thumbs down to repeal Obamacare. You said you thought at that time it might pass. It didn't. Why do you think it didn't pass then? And why do you think John McCain did what he did?
Well, I think it didn't pass purely because he made that critical decision at the last minute. And I think he made the decision that way because in the final analysis, John McCain is a man of integrity and conscience. And he simply could not cast a vote for something he didn't believe in. You may recall, Scott, I think it was during that last talk that I asked one question of you a number of times. I asked, what kind of people are we? What kind of people are we who would deny health insurance to 20 million people? What kind of people are we who would take away a health care coverage without a plan to replace it? And I asked that question many ways. And last night I was thinking ahead to our talk today, and so I sat down and wrote some more questions that I hope we'll get to talk about. My urologist once asked me, when you were on the Today Show, he said, I used to watch you, and I could never understand how you were able to answer all those questions. They'd ask you a question about neurosurgery. You knew the answer. They'd ask you a question about urology. You knew the answer. You're a gynecologist. How did you know the answers to objects? And I said, well, it was really simple. I had questions. I would call experts around the country in neurosurgery and urology and internal medicine, and I'd say, we want to talk about this subject tomorrow. what are the questions they should be asking of me, and then please tell me what I should say when they ask that question. So I sat down last night and I wrote a whole bunch of questions like what kind of people are we? Do we want universal health care for everyone or not? And if so, what is the best way to pay for it? And why is that the best way to pay for it? One of the questions I asked is, why? Why have the Republicans, who have had 7 years to come up with a better health care plan to replace Obamacare, why have they come up with nothing? Why have the Democrats, who have had 7 years to suggest improvements to to Obamacare, the ACA, why have they come up with nothing? One of the questions we should ask is, how good is health care in the United States? I mean, you know, do we have it? Are we the best? Are we the worst? Where do we stand? And what are we paying for that? And is there a better alternative? So those are the kinds of questions I hope we'll get to talk about today. Where do you want to start?
Yeah, I think we will. It's a tough thing because Democrat or Republican, we all are human beings. And the Republicans are the ones behind this idea to repeal and replace Obamacare. Now, I understand, I guess, the quandary that they're in because they ran on this in their home states on the national level to do this. So they feel if they don't do this before the next election next year, they are going to be drummed out of office. So I think their position is a little more difficult than the Democrats. So I understand why they want to do it, but I don't understand how they want to do it. If we can shed some light on that, which I think is in regard to one of your questions there.
Can't shed light on it because they don't have a plan. Repeal and replace with what? There is no replacement plan. So I ask you, how is it possible they have had 7 years and they have no plan that they're willing to put in front of us? Scott, if I flew into Marion, Ohio, and I told you I'm coming in next week and I'd like you to get 3 Marion physicians to join us and 1 hospital administrator and the local public health commissioner or the county public health commissioner or someone from the state, and by the way, get a professor of economics in there, and the 10 of us sat around a table for 2 days, 4, 5, 6 hours a day, we would have a plan in 48 hours. Might not be the best plan, but it would be better than nothing. It would be better than the ACA. I can guarantee you that, because the ACA can be improved. But there is no one sitting at that table who would say, let's repeal it, and then we'll figure out what to do, because there would be dozens, hundreds, maybe thousands of people in the Marion area who would wake up tomorrow uninsured. You know, one of the things we forget about in this country is why insurance is important. It is possible to get it, come down with a disease that is treatable, and the treatment for it costs $1 million a month. There is someone in Iowa, one patient with a genetic condition that is now treatable, that costs $1 million a month. I went into the emergency room 3-4 years ago when I had an episode. Actually, it was a very bizarre amnesic episode. I was there 2 hours, and my bill was $16,000. It's really easy to come. Had they hospitalized me, my bill would have been $100,000 in 2 days, 3 days. So the whole idea of insurance is that we pay a dollar each. A million of us pay a buck each, so that if one of us gets hit with a $1 million bill, it's no big deal. I'd do that for you, Scott. Would you do that for me?
Oh, certainly.
Thank you. And that what has happened that we would willingly allow our representatives to go in and vote 20 million people off insurance? So to me, that there's some really fundamental questions, and one of them is, it starts with who are we as a people? Do we believe in universal health care or not? And let me back up one second. You said something that was very simple and must not be ignored, and that is, you said, this issue is not simple.
Mm-hmm.
This is an incredibly complex issue. It involves education, it involves economics, it involves administration, it involves the capitalistic principle, and it gets down, it involves the moral principle, the moral issue. Do we want to insure everyone, or just those who can pay for it? And the president of the AMA, in a message put out to every 600,000 doctors yesterday, said something that everyone needs to hear. He said, there is one thing that we as physicians know is true from bitter experience. Uninsured patients live sicker and die younger than patients with health insurance coverage. They actually die 8.5 years earlier. So, as a nation, who are we? Do we want to insure everyone so that some people don't lose their lives because they're uninsured or not? That's the first question we have to answer.
That's very interesting, because if that is said, that an uninsured person will die 8 years earlier. Now,
on
average. Now, as it stands right now, when you get to age 65, 63, depending on where you are, you can get on Medicare if you meet the requirements. And most senior citizens, I believe, meet those requirements. Now, Bernie Sanders, for example, touts this as a great thing, Medicare for all. Now, if you make it to 65 and then you get on Medicare, does your age go back up? Do you end up living as long as the person who had insurance? How does that work?
You know, one of the things that I enjoy so much about being on your program is that you ask the best questions in the world. And that actually was a brilliant question to ask, because there is evidence. There's a giant, giant study that has compared the United States to the developed countries in Europe. And while we lagged behind until the age of 65 in many critical measures of health, at the age of 65, it starts to even out. And the reason for that is very simple, because in the United States, at 65, you're eligible for Medicare. By the way, you're not just eligible. You are required to participate. They take that payment right out of my Social Security check.
Well, and here's something that I think about a lot. Medicare came about in the early 70s, I believe. Late 60s.
Late 60s
under Lyndon Johnson. Medicare was created within the generation we live in now. There are many people who predate Medicare. Now, we always talk about people are living longer. Now, are people living longer because we have great new medicines and great new surgeries and better doctors and better education? Or are we living longer because this is the first generation that has had Medicare from retirement on?
Well, all of the above and then some. We are living longer for all of the reasons you stated. Medicare is one of the reasons, because people now can get life-saving care. They can afford it at a time when many people can't afford much else. But our lifestyles are improving. We have learned so much. You see older people jogging. Hey, I just climbed Mount Kilimanjaro. I'm bragging. 81 years old. So we no longer think of 65 as the time to retire and go sit on the couch. 65 is now the time when we can really seriously get involved in our health care. So it's a very, very complex issue, but there is absolutely no question that Medicare is one of the reasons, and a very important reason, why we are not just living longer, but we are living healthier. It's not just about how long you can live, but can you live in good health until the day you die? When comparing the United States to other developed countries like France, Germany, England, Denmark, all the Scandinavian countries, one of the things you see is that their citizens tend to live healthier lives while they're alive. And the reason is that they have complete access to physicians for routine care. It's not, can I afford to spend $100 to see the doctor? Seeing the doctor is free, or there's a very small copay. Here's the irony of that. The irony of that is that it may actually cost less to take care of everything for people than to pay the giant $250,000 bill when someone who couldn't afford care along the way shows up in the emergency room in crisis.
In people's lifetime, they have seen the doctor make house calls. A matter of fact, doctors pretty much all made house calls in the early days. People had babies at home. Doctors were not rich. Doctors did not have assistants and secretaries and staffs and the whole bit. What changed? What changed in medicine? I don't see many poor doctors now.
Actually, there weren't many poor doctors in those days either. But a couple things changed. One of the important changes was the advent of insurance, which meant that when you walked into the doctor's office, in the old days, you paid $10. Usually you paid cash. If you didn't have it, you told the doctor, gosh, I don't have it now. Can you give me a month or two? Of course. Or if you lived in a rural area, you said, come on out and pick some corn for yourself and your family. Medicine became a business, and it became a business for a number of reasons. Number one is that we suddenly had new things to offer beyond just the doctor's opinion. Well, here's what you got, and here's what I think you should do. Now, suddenly, we had antibiotics. We had drugs to offer. There were surgical procedures that didn't exist before. Hospitalization became not a place of last resort, but a place where you went because they could actually do something to fix you up in the hospital. Drug companies invested millions, tens of millions of dollars into the development of drugs. They had to recover that money, and insurance companies came into being. There are now 1,300 companies across the country insuring health care. So if I go to my doctor, he's got five people in the back office who have to send a different bill to every different company because every company has different rules. They have different payment formulas. There are different qualification criteria. We have complicated it fantastically. Now, you know which patients my doctor doesn't have to do that for? Medicare. Because there's only one rule for everyone over 65. There's only one company, and he doesn't need five people to bill for Medicare patients. It's all very simple. It's very standard. And the doctor is willing to accept the fact that Medicare cuts his rates or her rates. Medicare has established fees because it's so simple to get paid. You don't spend 20-30% of your time just trying to collect a bill.
Why is it that on CNN the other night, Bernie Sanders and Lindsey Graham had this debate? Because Lindsey Graham is pushing this new bill. And they want health care to be controlled. Lindsey Graham and his group want it to be controlled by the state. Bernie Sanders believes the federal government. Why would the state handle this better in the Republicans' mindset?
I don't think it has anything to do with handling it better. There is no question in my mind. Any logical, thoughtful person would look at the situation and say, does it really make sense to let 50 different states come up with 50 different policies for something as fundamental as health care? Look at the state of Iowa. I believe it's Iowa that has that one patient who costs $1 million a month. It's a small state, a small insurance pool, and it's destroying the premium structure within that state. Should you really have 50 different rules based on ideology? Because you and I both know that one state that believes everyone should have health care is going to make different decisions than a state who doesn't believe that ideologically. One state that is burdened with a sicker population is, let's say, West Virginia, or a rural state, is going to have a sicker population and different problems than Colorado, which has the thinnest population in the country. So the notion of carving it up into 50 different plans and allowing the political viewpoint in 50 different states to determine who gets what does not make sense from a business point of view, from an economic point of view, or from a moral point of view.
Global warming is, after the hurricanes, is a gigantic talking point now, and it seems as if global warming is political. Not every Republican denies it, and not every Democrat says it exists, but that tends to be the way it goes. It seems now as if the health care debate is political. Democrats want to keep Obamacare and fix it. Republicans want to repeal and replace it. Why is health care political? Is it because a Democrat was the first to get nationalized health care?
I honestly don't know the answer to that question. I am just baffled by what is going on today. I have one of my very closest friends, and I discuss these issues on a weekly basis. We actually take time every week to sit down and discuss what's going on. And he and I are at absolute opposite ends of the political spectrum and the religious spectrum, but not the moral spectrum. He is a dyed-in-the-wool, ultra-conservative Republican. I grew up, my father was a socialist, and I'm a liberal Democrat. Yeah, I'd give everything away. But and he's extremely religious. He's a born-again Christian. I'm a non-practicing Jew. And in the final analysis, sometimes we actually look at each other and ask the question, what would Jesus do? You know, he reminds me at times what Jesus said, what you do for one of the least of these, you do for me. And sometimes I have to remind him. There is no simple answer to any of this. I challenged him. He's a businessman. He's a brilliant businessman. And I challenged him to tell me why private insurance is important. Because there's good evidence that having private insurance, having all these multiple payers, 1,300 instead of one of them, adds to the cost. If nothing else, they have to make a profit, right? Whatever the cost is, they have to mark it up for the profit. There's the additional cost of administration. So I challenged him, tell me why private insurance is important. Now, he called me 2 weeks later. He said, are you ready for an admission? I said, I'm ready. We do this all the time. I have my share of admissions. He says, I have spent the last 2 weeks looking for evidence of any added value that private insurance makes in the United States of America, and I cannot find a single thing that contributes to health care. So Bernie Sanders really is onto something with his Medicare for All. Unfortunately, he doesn't know when to stop. He what would I do if I were king? All right. I would take Medicare, as he has suggested, because it's a fantastic insurance plan, the best in the world, the lowest cost for what we're getting and what we're delivering. And I would extend it to people age 60. He drops down to 55. I'd go more slowly because we're not quite sure what will happen, although I think we could probably move faster. I'd take it down to 55, 50, 45. And yes, there'd come a day in the next 5 to 50 years when everybody would insure it and we would have Medicare for All. But Bernie Sanders says, oh, while we're at it, let's add dental care. Let's add vision care. Let's add new tennis shoes. I'm making it up, you know, but he doesn't know when to stop. The fact of but the underlying concept of Medicare for All, which has two very critical issues covered, I think is the right way to go. Number one, for all. Universal health care for all. Let us never, never allow a U.S. citizen to die because he or she, to die prematurely because he or she did not have health insurance. We are better people than that. And number two, it is single payer, and it would lop at least 30% off the costs of health care in our country. That, by the way, is a fair subject to talk about. What does America cost? And if you want to compare us to the developed countries of the world, here's how we fare. Canada spends 10% of its gross domestic product on health care. Britain spends 10% of its GDP on health care. France spends 12%. Australia, by the way, President Trump said Australia has the best health care system in the world. Australia spends 9%. Switzerland, 11%. Germany, 11%. In the United States of America, we spend 17.2% of our GDP on health care. There's something wrong here, Scott. We're spending almost twice as much as some of these countries, and we are not delivering the best health care in the world. We are delivering the best health care in the world for people who are wealthy and people who have insurance. But if you don't have insurance, we are way, way down the list. Do you know a child born in Canada with cystic fibrosis has a life expectancy that is 10 years longer than a child born with cystic fibrosis in the United States? Everybody's surprised when I tell them that. They wonder, why is that possible? Well, it's possible because the child with cystic fibrosis in Canada can be seen anytime by a doctor, anytime, and every time it's necessary. And a child with cystic fibrosis, if the child does not have good health care, does not have health insurance, can't afford to go to the doctor. And that's true across the entire spectrum. You don't have to have cystic fibrosis. It applies to people with heart disease, with diabetes, you name it.
Here is something I think about often. This is not the same in every state, but a few years ago, maybe 10 or 15 years ago, Ohio decided that they were going to make a law that you had to have car insurance. If you're a licensed driver in Ohio and you're going to be on the road, you must have insurance. And if you don't, we can take your license, we can fine you, we can do all kinds of things. Now, this is to prevent you from causing an accident and the other person's car not getting paid for. Now, to my knowledge, it did not cause the price of insurance in Ohio to go up because everybody had to get some kind of insurance. So the insurance companies made more money because some people weren't buying insurance at all. Now, why couldn't it work that way with health insurance nationally? If there was a rate, the car insurance people base it off your driving record. If there could be a rate based on your income, I would imagine in the healthcare situation, of you have to get this, you must get medical insurance, but we're going to base it on your income, we're going to base it on your lifestyle, so on and so forth, up until Medicare age, because then Medicare kicks in. Wouldn't the insurance companies make more money? Because there are a lot of people who are uninsured totally.
Ironically, the answer is yes to that question. And here's, and ironically, it is the mandate, the so-called mandate, that you must buy insurance or there's a penalty if you buy in when you're sick. That's the thing most opposed by Republican congressmen and women. But here's the interesting part of that. Number one, the whole concept of insurance is if there is no mandate, then you can just buy it when you get sick, right? Just why would a young, healthy person buy insurance when I'm 25, I can wait. When I'm 31, I get leukemia, I'll buy insurance now, right? Well, that's crazy. That's not what insurance is about. Here's the interesting thing. When that person gets leukemia and shows up at an emergency room, collapsing, fainting because of anemia, and is checked out and they say, oh my God, you've got leukemia, they are required by law to hospitalize that person. They can't turn that person away. And you and I end up paying for that person's care because they don't pay the hospital bill. So the hospital bill adds their unpaid bills onto the amount they charge us. In reality, we insured people are paying for the health care of the uninsured, but we're paying much more because prevention is gone. They don't have prevention. They show up at the last minute. They show up sickest, and we end up paying more. It's a crazy system. And yet the very same people who will require auto insurance, well, of course we have to require auto insurance, are opposed to a mandate on health care insurance.
What happens? This is the third or fourth time since President Trump was elected that the Republicans have tried to do this. And it looks like it's going to be the fourth failed attempt because John McCain, again, doesn't seem like he's going to go that way with a couple other Republican senators, and that's all it takes. If it should happen, because they keep taking a run at it, if it should happen that they repealed it, and you're a cancer patient, or you're a diabetes patient, or you're any kind of patient that is continual care, if Obamacare, the ACA, is repealed, and you were getting your medicine and treatment through that, and you show up at your doctor's office or you show up at the pharmacy with a prescription, what happens? That can't be good for the politician. I mean, they might get a week of happiness. Hey, we did what we said we were going to do. But if you, what happens at the counter? What happens at the doctor's office?
In time, weeks, months, certainly no longer than a year, people will start dying unnecessarily. And the Democrats will and should start keeping a scoreboard. It'll be like Vietnam. And you will read every day of someone who died, a woman, a man, a child, young people, old people, who died because they were no longer insured. And then things will change.
These, again, are human beings. They're Republicans, but they're human beings. They
yes.
can't be that naive to know that that wouldn't happen. Why? Why?
There's only one possible answer. There is only one possible answer to this question, and it applies to both the Republicans and the Democrats. And that is, they don't care that the number one priority on their list is to get elected, to get reelected. That is the number one priority. Your health care is not, your health is not a priority for them. Mine is not. They don't care about anything until they get reelected. I don't know if you've been watching Ken Burns' series on the Vietnam War.
Yes, I have.
Have you been watching that?
Yeah, it's been very good.
It is. I have cried each night for the last three nights. And Richard Nixon tells Kissinger that there is nothing more important than being reelected, so make sure this doesn't happen before the election, right? We saw it. We heard it in his own words. They played the tapes. This is not someone making it up. I heard it in Nixon's own voice. And I am afraid that's what's going on both sides of the aisle. John McCain does not care about being reelected.
Is this the Ronald Reagan syndrome? The Ronald Reagan syndrome, as it was explained to me by his personal biographer, Edmund Morris, said that, David Brinkley said the same thing. He said that Ronald Reagan would veto a welfare increase spending bill in a second. Wouldn't even have to read the whole thing. Increase welfare, absolutely not. Veto it, done. And if somebody walked into his office and said, I don't have any clothes, he'd give them the shirt off his back. Is that the syndrome with the Republican Party right now? That we don't want you to die. I don't think they want people to die. But we just don't like spending money. We are, by nature, the conservative party. We think government should not be in your life. And by the way, oddly enough, libertarians, and there are a lot of very liberal libertarians who also don't like Obamacare, also don't like the Bernie Sanders idea. It's very puzzling.
I can't answer for those people because it boggles my mind. I don't understand. I consider myself somewhat of a Christian. I told you I'm Jewish, but Tony Campolo, just an incredible, incredible evangelical minister, once told me when I asked him, what's a guy like me supposed to do? You know, I'm not a person of faith. He said, did you believe there was a guy named Jesus who lived on this earth? I said, yeah, I do. He said, do you believe the stories they tell about him? I said, yeah, I do. Enough sources that I've I think that's really the way he lived. He says, well, forget all the rest of this nonsense and just live your life that way. So I do not understand how a Christian, and I include myself in that, please, by the way, how a good Jew, a good Muslim, a good Hindu, how could a good religious person be opposed to health care for all, knowing that it cost an uninsured person, the average uninsured person, 8.5 years of life to not have insurance? How could we all not say, we must find a way to do this? And, you know, I say, well, you know, it's going to cost you $50 a year to insure that poor person. How could we say no? Who are we as a people? Hey, we're right back to what I was saying in April. Who are we as a people?
Well, and as a people, these people don't get their offices by osmosis. We put them there. So,
yes.
What we have put the Republicans in power. The district I sit in is our representative is a Republican, Jim Jordan. Our governor is a Republican, John Kasich. Our president, we know who that is, President Trump, he's a Republican. The Senate's Republican, the House is Republican. We put them there. So what do we do to keep us alive, keep us moving, keep people in the right direction without bankrupting the country? What's the best possible solution here?
Well, first of all, I don't think we put them there. I think Twitter put them there. I think short sound bites, Fox News, MSNBC, people don't have facts. They're falling for slogans. They're falling for lies. I mean, we elected a man who told 1,000 lies. People don't care anymore. We must start caring about the fundamentals. This is not about health care. This is about who we are as a people. And I don't know who's listening to your program right now, but if you're listening, I hope this evening in your home you will talk about who we are as a people. I don't care if you talk about health care. Talk about who we are as a people. That's the issue for me. It is so much broader than just healthcare.
If the ACA is not perfect, what is perfect? Where can we go right now? We talked earlier about starting to gradually lower the age for Medicare. What else could we do?
Well, if you're asking me what we should do, what we could do with the least risk and with the most evidence behind it, the one smart thing to do would be to lower the age of Medicare and watch it for 5 years and see what happens. And we could actually measure the health status of people in that age group today and compare people in the same age group 5 years from now. We would have all of the information we need to know whether we should keep taking it all the way on down to the age of to birth or not. That is, I think, the most intelligent. We call it an experiment. Don't say we're changing it forever. We're going to do an experiment for 5 years and see what happens. Because we do know right now that Medicare is an extremely cost-effective and medically effective program. That's what I would recommend.
Is Medicaid a good program? A lot of talk about Medicaid.
Well, Medicaid would be a good program if the states, in some states it's a fabulous program. In some states they offer so little money to the doctors that large numbers of doctors will not see Medicaid patients. California is one state that's kind of in the middle, and there are many doctors saying, I literally can't afford to take care of a Medicaid patient because they won't even pay me what it costs me for them to walk in my office. I'm losing money every time I see a patient. Now, by the way, that's a change because when I practiced, I used to see some private patients way back. I was teaching at USC, but I borrowed a friend's office, and the deal was that he'd let me use his office for nothing as long as I saw his private patients when they needed to be seen on that day, and I charged them his rates, and I saw their housekeepers and gardeners for nothing. That was the deal. So things have changed, right? Once again, there is no simple answer, but we need to start working in every direction, improving ACA while we experiment with Medicare, bringing people of good faith to the table to talk. Why? If there was a single problem right now that frustrates me, why Republicans and Democrats of good faith won't sit down and talk to each other?
It's been the long time conundrum. So as a person listening right now, what should people, every time this comes up for a vote, they say, call your congressman, call your senator. If you're calling from Ohio right now, what should you tell them?
I think the most important thing you have to decide, the issue is, do you believe that every person in this country deserves an opportunity for health insurance and deserves health care? If you do believe that, if you believe in universal coverage, you need to call your congressperson and say, this is what I believe in. This is the only moral, decent approach to take, and I demand that you find a way to do this, even if it means working with a Democrat, or I'm going to run your tail out of office next time, next election. Now, if you don't believe that, I will accept that. I will accept your position, and you should call and say, look, I do not believe insurance should be mandatory, and I do not believe we should cover everyone. But I do believe you shouldn't throw something out until you have a replacement. I would call my congressman if I had a Republican congressman, and I would say, don't you dare put an insured person off insurance until you have a replacement. Do whatever works.
If you were a betting man, as long as John McCain is in the Senate and we don't have another election until the end of 2018, do you think the Republicans will get this done before the election? The repeal?
No.
And replace? No. Okay.
Well, no, and the reason is the majority of the country now, I think it's 62%, believes that Obamacare should not be repealed without a replacement. I did not say should not be repealed. Should not be repealed without a replacement. The majority of the country believes there either has to be a replacement or Obamacare should be fixed.
Well, Dr. Art Uihlein, it is always a fascinating conversation. I enjoy having you on. The time flies right by because I think we all learn something, and that is what good radio is supposed to do.
Thank you, Scott. I always enjoy it because you are good radio. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Dr. Art Uihlein, stay with us. Coming back in about 10 minutes.
1FM. Week 3 action saw the Lions defeat the Vikings 20-6, the Jets defeat the 49ers 20-6, and the